Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County.
This is episode 39, Moving On Up.
And welcome back to Color Country Politics. You guys, I'm so excited today. We have Amy Winter Newton with us, who is a state gubernatorial candidate. She's been in Southern Utah, and we have had just a heck of a time trying to get our schedules coordinated. So we're just thrilled that you were able to fit us in and that you were down here and could come and talk to our audience.
For sure.
I'm Jenny Hendricks.
I'm Jesse Harris.
And again, we're just thrilled to have Amy Winter Newton with us.
Thanks.
So let's just jump right in, Amy, and tell us just a little bit about your background. I think people in this end of the state may not be as familiar with your work. So tell us, you know, kind of your background, who you are, and why you're doing this.
Well, thank you. Yeah, so I have been involved in local government for over 25 years. So I first started, I was involved in the incorporation effort for Taylorsville City.
Okay.
We were part of unincorporated Salt Lake County. People in our area were fed up with more apartment complexes being put in and not having that local control. Mm-hmm. And so a group of us got together and decided we want to try and push for an incorporation effort. And so I was the public relations and advertising person of that and while I was in college. And it was awesome. It won with an overwhelming amount of support. We became Utah's 10th largest city.
Wow.
So from that, I was really involved in the city. I served on the Planning Commission for 8 years, learning planning and zoning issues and how to deal with growth and be able to have communities that make good sense and are well connected was a really good thing that I learned there. I stayed involved. I was on the Economic Development Committee. I started a group called Citizens for a Stronger Taylorsville, and we'd lobby the city council for things that we cared about. I was involved in campaigns and very involved in my city. I felt very invested after that incorporation effort. I also cared a lot and still care a lot about the school system.
Yeah,
I have 4 children. They range in age from 15 to 23. So they're older and most of them are graduated and have left. But I was very involved in their schools. So whether it was serving in the PTA or on school community councils, I served for 5 years on the district-wide school community council. Mm-hmm. But I was in the classrooms. I saw what was going on there, and that gave me some good experience on education issues. And then I started a small business. So I'm a small business owner. I did mortgage loans and worked from home while my kids were growing up. And then my mayor called me one day and said, hey, come work for the city. And this was when my baby was in first grade, so it was good timing. So I became Taylorsville's first communications and economic development marketing person. And I did that for 3 years at the city. Well, we needed somebody to run for the Salt Lake County Council. And we had no women on that 9-member council.
Wow.
And needed more representation on our west side. And so I jumped into that race and kind of put my career on hold and was elected to the Salt Lake County Council with 78% of the vote in a special election.
Wow.
So I am one of 5 Republicans with 4 Democrats on our county council, and we have a Democrat mayor. So it's a really interesting dynamic to serve there because for me, I'm, you know, one of the more conservative Republicans, and it's about making sure that we work, can have good relationships and work well with people, but still be able to get things done while standing on principle. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of this delicate balance that I've been able to figure out over the years, and it's been a good experience.
That's really fascinating because, of course, in rural southern Utah, we do tend to lean a little bit more conservative. I don't think that's a secret. and one of the things that I think makes some of us a little nervous is to see the growing voter base on the Wasatch front and even on the Wasatch back. and we sort of feel like maybe our voices in rural Utah aren't being heard. So I like the fact that you identify as a conservative and have the ability to work with people who maybe aren't like-minded, but to still get things done and get those conservative philosophies across. That's really something that that is a concern because we, like I say again, we kind of feel like we're We don't have the voice in that conservative arena. So tell us about a little bit about your philosophy. You mentioned that you're conservative, and I think that's a big deal to a lot of our audience.
Yeah, so I, you know, I'm a Republican for several reasons, but one is I'm a fiscal conservative, and I feel like tax dollars are such a sacred trust. And I get so frustrated when my colleagues, I'll hear somebody say, oh, it's just $10,000 in the budget. It's not, it's nothing. And I'm like, no, every penny matters. And when we're looking at a budget, which, I mean, we're working on the state's second largest budget. Mm-hmm. It's $1.2 billion. Wow. And in fact, we're in the middle of our budget right now. And our mayor has proposed a tax increase. And so me and the other, some of the other Republicans have gotten together to get our, you know, we're going through the budget to try to find wasteful spending to be able to propose cuts. And so to me, that is one of the most important principles of being a good steward over tax dollars is just being able to look at budgets, understanding them. It's something I want to do on the state level, make sure we're going through every department. How are we measuring our success? Because measuring, you know, certain number of people you serve isn't a good measurement of success. Sometimes it's, well, you know, how do we better improve this program so we can get fewer people off government assistance or whatever we're doing. And so, you know, that's something I want to tackle is the state's budget. And I feel like you can do that really well in an executive role because you're managing those departments. You can get good people in place who are fiscal conservatives as well and really figure out where we need to streamline. So that's something I feel passionately about. In fact, I'll tell you a little story related to that. So the first year I was on the council, we went through the budget process and it came and went like that. And I felt like, wait a second, when are we going to have robust debate on all these different issues? I mean, we basically rubber stamped the mayor's budget and I was kind of ticked about it. So the second year I thought, nope, this isn't going to happen. And I remember sitting with one of my colleagues, Richard Snellgrove. We were huddling in a Midvale McDonald's late one night, the day before we were going to be going through a lot of these things. And we came with our lists of proposed cuts. And we had this long list. And I said, well, let's put together a slideshow, a PowerPoint, where we're kind of going, we have each cut that we want to propose on a slide. And we'll get to each one. And one of us can make the motion to cut. The other one can second it. And then we'll take a vote. Like, let's have people have to really take a position on each of these items.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, so we did that. So I put together this PowerPoint. We show up the next day. It had 39 different slides.
Okay.
$4 million in cuts. And we sit down and start going through it. And I said, okay, so the first one flashes up. I'd like to make a motion. We cut $12,000 from, you know, this TV program thing we were doing. And Richard seconded it. And then everybody voted, and they all voted in favor. I put the one I knew I could get everybody on first. Well, the second one comes up, and one of my Democrat colleagues said, this isn't how we do things. This isn't how we do it. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, you know, we go through each department, and you know, we do it that way. We don't just, like, randomly propose cuts. And I said, well, okay, I can sort them by department if that's easier. And anyway, so they said, well, show us what your cuts are, and then we'll kind of go through and we can sort them. And I said, all right. So I flashed through one slide after another, took a few seconds on each slide. And you could have heard a pin drop in that room as the department heads are sitting on the edge of their seats trying to see what from their
department. Where's my department coming up?
So anyway, but we ended up getting 1.6 million of that passed.
Wow, okay.
And every year after I do that, I go through each thing. In fact, it made me feel good because after that year, we didn't get as much cut as we had hoped, but one of the fiscal managers said, Amy, you just single-handedly changed the culture of budgeting in Salt Lake County.
That's amazing.
And I was like, that is honestly one of my most proud moments.
Neat.
Of service is being able to having somebody say you have changed the culture
that's
of budgeting.
Awesome.
People know you're watching.
Right.
And I think that's something we've got to just have a good eye on in state government. We've got to be able to look at these things and really analyze what are we doing. And, you know, I don't want people to mistake, because I am fiscally conservative. I'm very frugal. But I also know how to look for long-term investment.
Sure.
Because we have to be able to invest in the right places. And so to me, it's not just a no on any spending. It's how do we take these precious tax dollars and how do we utilize them to save money down the road? And maybe that's investing in good mental health and substance abuse programs so that we don't have to build more jail beds, which are more expensive. So anyway, that's kind of how I approach budgeting. A couple other reasons why I'm a Republican and a conservative is I believe in local control. I am so tired of unfunded mandates by the state. Mm-hmm. And I know state leaders are sick of the federal government encroaching, mm-hmm. but yet we do it on the state level. And I'm like, yeah. no, I came from originally city government, where that's where the rubber meets the road.
Sure.
Those are the yeah. people who know their community better mm-hmm. than anyone. Mm-hmm. And that's who we should be relying on to help us dictate our future. So for me, in the governor's office, I'm going to be pushing as much down to the local level as possible.
That's great.
And it's one of those things that I know state leaders think, well, we might know better. And I disagree.
Yeah.
I think local residents know, local leaders know better. And if we can help engage those local residents
yes.
in mm-hmm. their government, mm-hmm. then we have success. We'll
yeah.
see great things.
No, I absolutely agree with that. And again, I think that's something that rural Southern Utah sort of feels sidelined a little bit.
Absolutely.
Because so many decisions are made at the state level on the Wasatch Front. So we had talked earlier about how do we include rural Utah in the economic success that is happening largely along the Wasatch Front? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, and first of all, you're absolutely right. I have, as I've toured the state, so I've been to all 29 counties. I did yeah. that April through July just to meet with people quietly, not
yeah.
trying to make a big to-do, but I really wanted to understand what were on the minds of the people in each of these communities. And I met with people here in Iron County, both your elected officials, and then had a meeting at the library with residents. And you're right, everywhere I go, our rural communities are saying, we feel like the red-headed stepchild.
Yeah.
We feel like the Wasatch Front is the focus in state government, and we're just kind of an afterthought. And it makes me sad to hear that. Like,
mm-hmm.
I didn't realize how much, but now looking at it, I'm like, yeah, I can totally see that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're looking at where the population is, and yet we've got unique issues in every
yeah.
community.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about economic development. So, you know, we're seeing great success in the Wasatch Front, all these companies coming. I'm a little disappointed that our rankings are slipping. We were number one for job growth, and I think now it's number three.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to get Johnny on the spot to make sure that that doesn't slip. But when we talk about rural Utah and how we can help with economic development, there's a couple of things that I want to specifically look at day one when I get in office. First is, we've got to look at broadband capacity.
Thank you.
Oh, okay, good. I'm like, I don't even know what your broadband stuff is in Iron County, honestly. Sorry, I'm admitting that.
That's been my pet issue since 2006.
Are you serious?
Yes.
That's serious.
Okay,
yeah.
See, we didn't plan this.
That was
so
not
that
even planned,
now.
You guys. That
yeah.
was
But let
off
me
the
tell
cap.
You why. Because some areas of our state, we say, oh, yeah, they've got broadband. But no, they've got broadband to certain offices or whatever. The homes in that area don't have
mm-hmm.
it. And it's not enough to just have good, strong broadband. We need to have competition.
Yes.
So we've got to have more than one provider so that there's good competition to keep costs low.
Yeah.
So that's number one. The second thing that I want to do is look at how do we build the entrepreneurship mm-hmm. programs? Because I hear yeah. over and over again from people in rural Utah, we want our kids to stay here.
Mm-hmm.
And our kids go off because there's not jobs here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes people have this panacea of, oh, let's just bring a big Amazon fulfillment center or something to our community. You guys would not be happy with that
no,
here.
No,
that's
not
a good
the
fit.
Right. That's
yeah.
not the fit
mm-hmm.
that you want. And those
mm-hmm.
probably aren't the jobs that you're necessarily
mm-hmm.
looking for. But if we can help teach the kids who are in rural Utah how to be entrepreneurs and start their businesses here,
mm-hmm.
there is something to that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, especially because if you look at the data, you see a lot of people talk about the decoupling between income and productivity. And you see if you overlay self-employment on that, it's correlated.
Absolutely.
That if the less people work for themselves, the less that they are keeping those productivity gains. So that's a huge thing right there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an
that's
issue.
Great.
We've got to tackle it. And I really believe the state shouldn't be dictating to local communities, here's what we're going to put here, or here's what we're going to do here. It should
mm-hmm.
be from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You guys should be saying, hey, state, here's kind of what we have. Here's our niche. Here are
mm-hmm.
things we're good at. Here's kind of what we have workforce for. Here's an area that we want to develop for that.
Mm-hmm.
We need your help getting the transportation
yeah.
infrastructure here.
Yeah.
Like that's to me how the approach should be is it should be from the ground up so the state can help support and do, you know, whatever. But we have some communities where people are like, we don't want to grow. We don't want economic development,
right.
which I mean, it should be their decision as a community
mm-hmm.
if that's how they want to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
absolutely. Well, great. That's great. And again, that was completely off the cuff. We did not plan that. So
<That's>
that was
right.
great. You hit the nail on the head. Okay. So tell us a little bit more. You had mentioned a mental health kind of component in the context of maybe planning ahead and spending those dollars wisely. And that's something that I have seen even here locally, is we have to build a new jail. The one we have is just woefully inadequate.
On its last legs.
It really is. Yeah. It's really in a sad state. But I also see, you know, talking about the state, you know, dictating things. We're having issues with drug courts, with enforcement, with, I mean, our law enforcement is so good. They're just so dedicated and so passionate, but they're kind of handcuffed in some of the things that they have the ability to do. And I think when you talk about opioids and mental health and addiction and suicide and all of these things that we're dealing with socially, tell us a little bit about your thoughts on that.
Well, it's an issue that we have to address. I mean, when you look at the suicide rates and the opioid use in our state, it's not acceptable. We've got to fix this. And I think there's some research that needs to be done to figure out the underlying problem. I mean, I'm one who would rather, like, let's figure out where the problem starts, not like how to triage at the end. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think there's some work that needs to be done. I'll share a personal experience. So one of my sons was struggling, and one night I was sitting home in my family room, and it was like 10:30 at night, and he came upstairs and he's like, "Mom, I'm done. I want to die." Mm. And I could just feel the desperation in his voice.
Wow.
Like, for months we had been trying to get him into professionals. I knew he was struggling. And this particular night, he was basically like, I'm ready to go.
Wow.
And my husband was out of town at the time, and I sat there and I was like, I don't even know what you do for this. Like, what do I do? Do I call 911? Do I take him to the emergency room? Mm-hmm. It was so overwhelming as a mom, and my heart just broke for this kid who was sitting here, like, looking to me for, you know, "Mom, I'm desperate. I need help." And we couldn't get him into doctors soon enough.
Wow.
So we've got a couple of issues. Number one, we do not have enough healthcare professionals in this. We don't. Mm-hmm. We need more. So we're going to have to address this from our higher ed end to figure out how do we get more professionals to go into the field and how do we train them so that we can, especially with Medicaid expansion coming online, we're going to have a great need there.
Yeah.
So if anybody wants to go into social work or psychiatry or anything, yes.
Call Amy. Field. She's going to hook you up.
Yeah, it's a good field. It's going to be a hot field here in Utah. So that's the first thing, is we need more healthcare professionals. Mm-hmm. The second thing is we need people to have a better understanding of where to get resources.
Yeah.
So as a mom, I thought, I'm on the county council. We do mental health, and I don't even know who to call or what to do. I did end up taking him to an emergency room, but I didn't take him to the right one. The one we took him to didn't have a psych ward. And anyway, it was a bad experience. And so I got really involved in this issue. I sit on the state's Mental Health Crisis Line Commission now. Mm-hmm. I wrote an op-ed about this experience. My son was awesome and willing to let me share, because I have three sons, and they were all teenagers at the time. So, so he said, if it would help somebody else, you can share my story.
That's very generous.
But what I've realized is we have a great opportunity to have, crisis lines now for people. Mm-hmm. And in Salt Lake County, we were really lucky. We have a 24/7, crisis line that people can call. It wasn't like that throughout the state. And so when I got involved along with some of our other elected leaders, that was one priority for us, is we got to figure out how to make sure the entire state has access to 24/7 crisis lines if they need to. Because now I've used that before, where I've called, you know, in other cases and said, "Hey, what do I do?" And these are professionals on the line that can give you help instantly. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can't fix it instantly, but they can at least help direct you
to resources.
We need more of that. And so that's something that I've been working on. But we also need to look at how do we better get people immediate help. Mm-hmm. And part of that's the issue that I talked about with a lack of healthcare professionals, but also figuring out, is there a better system? Because even when our police officers pick up people who are mentally ill, sometimes it's the mental illness piece that really needs to be fixed, not a criminogenic behavior of some sort. Mm-hmm. And so right now they're taking them to our jails, which is causing an overcrowding problem.
Yeah.
And that's not the best place for people to get help.
Right.
So anyway, we're looking right now at do we have receiving centers? Is there a way to have receiving centers around the state where you know, a police officer can bring somebody who's dealing with mental illness or opioids or mm-hmm. whatever other substance abuse and immediately be able to drop them off, then they can get back to work on the streets. Right. I mean, these police officers mm-hmm. sitting in an emergency room waiting to, for somebody to get admitted, that's right. not a good use of public dollars.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so there's ways that I think we can do the system, but underlying, we've got to fix this. Yeah. We got to figure out why are one in three kids on university campuses right now struggling with mental health?
Yeah.
There's something there we got to fix.
It's true. So, both of my kids are at the University of Utah and we talk about it occasionally and it's hard. They're dealing with a lot. 25 years ago when I was in college, we were not dealing with the same thing. We were dealing with different things, but we had a mental health professional on a few weeks ago and we were talking about screens and phones and that kind of access. And I do think that needs to be part of the conversation as well. So anyway, we don't need to go down that
scary stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and we need to talk about it. I mean, let's break the stigma.
Yeah.
Let's be able to be open about it. Yeah. I've had people since I wrote that op-ed come up to me and say, thank you. My daughter struggles too.
Yeah.
And I haven't been able to tell anybody.
Yeah.
And I'm like, tell somebody, let's talk about this. A lot of our kids are dealing with this. So let's talk about it.
Well, and if someone is, if they're diabetic or, they have some other kind of chronic illness, it's no big deal to talk about it. And I think mental health needs to reach that same, that same place where we're talking about it as a medical thing or, something that needs to be addressed. And you're right, taking that stigma. Off of it.
So. I went through postpartum depression after my second baby.
Oh, wow.
Like I've been there. I know mm-hmm. that feeling. I know mm-hmm. how that feels. And I feel like the more we can talk about it, the better it is for us to get support. So.
That's great. That's great. Another thing that we were talking about before we started recording is, and I think this has a lot to do with rural areas too, is your work on intergenerational poverty.
Yes.
Well, tell us a little bit about your thoughts on that.
So Salt Lake County, so I started the first Salt Lake County Intergenerational Poverty Task Force. And the state's trying to do some work there, but they're finding it's really on the local level mm-hmm. that this problem is going to be fixed.
Sure.
And a lot of our communities are trying to do some things. And we're not doing it necessarily in conjunction with the state. We kind of just on our own decided to do this. So I've got state agencies, county departments, city leaders, and even school district superintendents on my task force.
Okay.
And we've been meeting, trying to figure out how do we help these families who are on government dependence mm-hmm. one generation after another. Mm-hmm. And there's two reasons I care passionately about this issue. Number one, people need to feel the dignity and self-respect that comes from providing for themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, how good do you feel when you go and you work hard and you are able to provide for your mm-hmm. family? It's a good feeling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The second thing is, it's taxpayer money.
Right. Yeah.
Like, let's figure out, I think it's $156 million that we're spending in our state on government assistance programs. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot
And
of
a lot
money.
Of it's federal dollars. But they're still our taxpayer dollars. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those are kind of my two motivations for this. And so one of the things that's tricky is the state won't give us the names of who these families are. Mm-hmm. They have here's how many and here's how many in your area, but they won't give. And I've heard from other county leaders, it's frustrating, mm-hmm. which you get why there's privacy issues there and everything else. But so one thing that we've done is we've done a heat map of our county to figure out where's the highest concentration. And we've now focused there, knowing that whatever we provide in that area is going to help. So we're looking at early childhood education. Mm-hmm. How do we get kids kindergarten ready? Mm-hmm. We're focusing on one specific elementary school community. And then we're also looking at, we're doing a navigator program where people have their information on an app, mm-hmm. Stored, and they can take it when they're going to different agencies, they can share their information. So they're not filling out more and more paperwork. So we're piloting that.
That's great.
And we're also looking at how do we help we're trying to figure out how do we help get jobs for people in this area? Like how do we help make the family financially stable? Uh-huh. But then we know this change is going to happen with the kids.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So being able to get community resources for kids to know, hey, I have a path to success here.
I think that's huge.
It's huge.
It's huge. Yeah.
So it was tricky.
And that's that whole long-term view you were talking about of, it's very easy to say, well, we need to cut these programs now to save a dollar without seeing we'll save 10 down the road
right.
if we do it right. Mm-hmm.
The best example of that is with road maintenance. Mm-hmm. So your cities are spending money on slurry seals and road maintenance. But if that budget was cut, which, I mean, they really are hurting for road funds.
Yeah.
And you had to, and your roads started deteriorating and you had to rebuild them. It is so much more expensive, uh-huh. three times
yeah.
more at
yeah.
least, than just being able to provide that maintenance. And that's how it should be with all of our government programs, is figure out what is the best way to save long-term for mm-hmm. taxpayers and still be able to get the job done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that. Love that.
Do you want me to tell you about
yes.
pushing back against?
Yes, that was the next on my list.
Making yep. hard decisions.
Yeah. Because we had talked about this a little bit, and I think, you know, in any office, you're gonna run into static. You're gonna run into people who disagree with you. Running for the highest office in the state, you're going to probably make some people upset.
Well, I've made people upset lots of times, and I'm kind of used to that. So
tell us about that.
Well, okay, so I want to just share this. My philosophy on this is we need a bold leader who's not going to be afraid to say no to special interests, lobbyists, people who maybe have a different viewpoint. We need somebody who's going to be able to look at a long-term vision. And for me, this is about not just the next 4 years, but the next 40 years mm-hmm. as we plan for different growth issues and, like you mentioned, economic development and all mm-hmm. these things. So to me, I think that you always have to keep that in mind. And sometimes it's hard. You get in the hot seat mm-hmm. and people put pressure on you to do things. So I want to just give an example of a time when we had to make some hard decisions. So we have, we as a council had funded a new DA building for our district attorney. And mm-hmm. along with that was a parking garage. And we had allocated $4 million for that parking garage. Well, during the legislative session, the legislature allocated some transportation funds. And we had done, basically, they give them to the county and then mm-hmm. the county doles them out, right? Mm-hmm. But legislative leadership sat down and they came up with their list with their lobbyist. And so much was going to these cities. And of course, the cities who the Speaker of the House and the Senate President represent got more than uh-huh. the others, which sure. tends to happen. But I noticed a $4 million amount for Salt Lake County. We don't really have any county roads. We're mostly cities and townships. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. it's all, you know, it's state roads or city roads. It's not really any county roads. And I was like, I said to our mayor, $4 million. And he said, oh, don't worry about that. You know, there's kind of a long story with that. And I was like, okay. So anyway, it comes before us. Well, I find out that they had decided to take the $4 million we had allocated for our parking garage, because those are transportation related. Mm-hmm. And they are giving us $4 million for a parking garage that we already had money set aside for, and had made an agreement with the mayor that he would give that $4 million to a theater that was being built.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this all came out. It came to light. We were very transparent about it in our mm-hmm. meeting. This is why transparency in government is like the most important thing ever.
Yeah.
And I'm actually quoted in the Deseret News saying, this is a shell game and I won't be part of it. And standing up against that, and you know, I knew going in, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to have this lobbyist after mm-hmm. me. I mean, I'm going to pay a price at some mm-hmm. point.
Yeah.
And I don't care, because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, you have to be able to sleep at night when
yeah.
you make these decisions.
Yeah.
And so I say, bring it. Like, you know, we've got to do what's in the best interest of taxpayers.
Sure.
And our public.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's great.
I can't even imagine the stretch of saying a parking garage is transportation.
Well, yeah. I know that one too, but in the list of rules on it, it qualified, and
yeah.
that's where the little exchange was made. But mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, some of us on the council voted no, and it still passed. There wow. were enough votes for that to pass, yeah. and so that money was transferred. And oh,
yeah.
Yeah, I just thought, no, that's not, we already are short on transportation dollars.
Right.
Like to,
yeah.
It made me sad.
Yeah.
So.
No, when I go to Salt Lake, I can tell that you're short on transportation.
Are our roads bad?
The roads are bad.
Like pothole bad or just lots of traffic?
Both.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. When I lived up in that area, I was in White City. And
yeah.
Oh. Our roads were plowed so much better than any of the Sandy City roads around us.
Because you had Salt Lake County snow plows?
Yeah. It was, and it was just, it was very funny, because it's just this little residential area, and then you get out to the main road and it's like there's slush everywhere, and our roads are like perfectly dry.
That's
we
great.
Do have great public works people in our county, I will say. So
that's great. Well, what else would you like our community to know about your candidacy, about you, anything else that that Iron County, Cedar City, and our local community needs to know?
Well, my big plan is we've got to have long-term planning. We do. We've got to have, you know, I have a vision for how things, I mean, we haven't even gotten into education and workforce.
Well, let's get into it.
Do we have time for
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Okay. This is your time. You bet.
So one of the things that as I've seen my kids go through the system, that's just made makes my blood boil, is our kids are graduating from high school with no idea of really what the career options are if they want to stay in Utah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't do a good job of helping them say, hey, we have a need for this kind of engineer, or we have a need for this, or whatever. We aren't matching up the education system with our workforce and with economic development. Mm-hmm. There's a total disconnect there.
We feel that brain drain here. A lot of
do
people,
you?
We have so many students that graduate from SUU and say, I love Cedar City. Yeah. I want to stay here. There's not a job in my field and I have to leave.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're not matching that up very well. And one of the things that I've seen as my kids have graduated from high school is we tell every kid they should go to college, which I think we've got to change that culture
yep,
too.
Absolutely.
Because we need people in the trades.
Yep.
We need police officers. We need all of these other things too.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, having kids go waste time when they don't have a career path mm-hmm. in mind mm-hmm. and graduate with a degree that's not going to help them
yep.
towards that is not a good use of their money.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Our taxpayer dollars, mm-hmm. which help subsidize a lot of our higher ed
mm-hmm. yeah.
or their time. And so I've seen that with my own kids, that they've graduated, they've gone to college, they kind of wander around for a few years trying to figure out what they want to mm-hmm. be when they grow up. They just pick a major and it hasn't been very career focused. And I want to change that.
Yeah.
That to me is something we've got to make I want Utah to have the number one strongest and most nimble workforce.
Uh-huh.
We've done great with job growth along the Wasatch Front, but we need to fix the workforce issue so
right.
that there's that connection. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things. And then with education, we've got this teacher shortage.
Yeah.
How do we expect to have high quality education for our kids with a teacher shortage where we can't, you know, if teachers aren't good, we
right.
keep them because we don't have other options.
Yeah.
And we can't attract the best and brightest if we aren't competitive there.
Yeah,
and so
exactly.
That's the other thing, is we've got to fix the teacher shortage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've seen the same thing play out in law enforcement of, you know, there's always this, oh, well, we can't give a pay raise right now because the budget says no. And that keeps going on for a few years. And then the turnover starts increasing
yes.
to a point where the turnover is more expensive than if you'd given out the pay raises.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's about long-term planning, right?
Yeah.
And looking
yeah.
at where do we best allocate those dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the things. So for me, education, mm-hmm. workforce, and growth issues, and those vary depending on where we live. I mean,
yeah,
for
sure.
us up in Salt Lake County, growth issues are based on, you know, we've got air quality and,
uh-huh.
and all this traffic congestion and things we've got to really address. For you guys, we got to make sure you've got water.
Yeah.
We've got to make sure that you've got jobs for your kids. I mean, there's
yeah.
different issues depending on the different communities.
No, that's
and
true.
So we need that focus on
You're
planning.
Right. And I like your conversation about pushing that down to the local level, because the more local the solution, the better the solution
absolutely.
Will be.
Absolutely.
So you get better buy-in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's a better fit. You know, mm-hmm. it's more customized to what every local community needs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you guys know
great.
Best.
Yeah.
You
that's
really
great.
Do.
That's great. Well, what else do we need to talk about?
Oh my gosh, I feel like at the end of the day, I'm a bold leader who's willing to make hard decisions
mm-hmm.
and who's wanting to plan for the future. And that's what this boils down to. To me, it's about making sure this is a great state for
mm-hmm.
our kids and our grandkids
mm-hmm.
and our posterity to be living here and being successful and having a good quality of life. And that's why I'm running.
That's great.
So
that's great. Well, thank you so much. We're so grateful for your time. I know once you're a candidate, sometimes your schedule is not your own anymore.
It's true. Yes.
So we're just thrilled that you had time to stop in Cedar City and tell us a little bit about yourself and about your candidacy. Again, this is Amy Winder Newton, candidate for governor, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.